are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. It's Thursday. Brian Peacock here with you once again. A lot to get into today. We're going to push back the NFC West stuff to next week because there's too much happening around the NFL today to get into that kind of stuff. So we're going to hear from Judge Klippin in San Jose, who ruled on the Reuben Foster case. Best case scenario probably for Reuben Foster in this case. So we're going to get into all that, what the charges remain for him in this case. And then other news around the league in the NFL, there's new rules involving the national anthem. The owners got together, made a controversial ruling there, so we're going to get to some of that. And if there's time at the end of the show, maybe hear from Kyle Shanahan, who spoke about OTAs. But really, the big story today is all Reuben Foster, and it looks like he's coming back to practice with the 49ers in Santa Clara very soon. I do want to remind everybody to rate, review the show. We're on iTunes, we're on Spotify, we're on Google Play, we're everywhere you can find podcasts, including LockedOn49ers.com. Not only podcasts, but other content going up over there all the time. You can find the streams of every episode and all the places to subscribe to Locked On 49ers. And you can find me on Twitter at BD Peacock. You can email the show LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. And as Nick and I expected on yesterday's episode, Judge Nona Klippin has dismissed the first two charges against Reuben Foster, the domestic violence charge and the one that he smashed her cell phone to prevent her from calling 911. The remaining charge was a gun charge that was a felony charge that has been also reduced by the judge to a misdemeanor. So now a pretrial hearing is set on the misdemeanor gun charge for June 6th. So basically best case scenario stuff there for Reuben Foster. The big charges there were the domestic violence stuff. Those completely dropped, and that's what was keeping Reuben Foster away from the 49ers. More on that in just a second. And a shout out to all the beat writers who were there in San Jose at the Hall of Justice breaking all this down. Jaquaski Tartt and Adrian Colbert, teammates of Reuben Foster, also there in support of the team's starting safety. So I guess you could say the last line of defense for Reuben Foster in court to support Reuben Foster in San Jose on Wednesday. This from Cam Inman. He said, judge dropped domestic violence charge against Reuben Foster by citing how accused, quote, unusually calm in 911 calls, no photo evidence of injuries from being punched as opposed to street fight from the night before, and the accuser previously doing jail time for false DV claim against another ex-boyfriend. This from Patrick Claiborne on Twitter. On the weapons charge, Judge Klippin's reasoning was that there was no violation of federal statutes and the gun was purchased lawfully in Alabama. So yeah, again, with the gun charge and the pot charge, if he just had the pot in San Francisco, it would have been okay. If he had the gun in Alabama, there'd be zero charges left for Reuben Foster right now. On to David Lombardi, who had a tweet about the judge saying that there was, quote, a total absence of evidence that Ennis feared retribution. And here Klippin paused and repeated, quote, no evidence. The judge said, quote, no evidence multiple times throughout giving her ruling here on the Reuben Foster case. So it was a pretty emphatic dismissal of charges by Judge Klippin for Reuben Foster, which again was best case scenario for Reuben Foster. And some official statements also about this from the Santa Clara County District Attorney's Office. And a lot of people, including myself, and it sounds like Judge Klippin is kind of confused why they even took it this far, because there was just not enough evidence to go forward in this case. And the Santa Clara DA said, quote, we are disappointed in the judge's decision. We are disappointed because the evidence demonstrated that Mr. Foster seriously hurt his girlfriend. Some have wondered why we still think Mr. Foster hurt his girlfriend when she said that he didn't. Recantation is common among domestic violence victims. Some are scared. Some feel guilty. Some are coerced. Some need money. Whatever the cause, we move forward on cases when victims falsely recant because we know that if we don't, more victims will be hurt. Our commitment to domestic violence survivors is unwavering. So they apparently still think that testimony during the preliminary hearing by Alyssa Ennis was still false and the original accusation was accurate. And they seem to be the only ones that really believe that. Even the people that really jumped in on Reuben Foster and called for his release right away. I really, the DA is the only people I think that are still pointing the finger at Reuben Foster for this thing. And when it comes to the 49ers, a statement from the team and 49ers GM John Lynch, quote, "The organization is aware the domestic violence charges against Reuben Foster were dismissed earlier today. As a result, he will have the opportunity to rejoin the team tomorrow. And it has been made clear to Reuben that his place on this team is one that must continue to be earned. We will continue to monitor the remaining misdemeanor charge." So that from John Lynch, it's official. Reuben Foster invited back to practice, will be at OTAs for Thursday's practice. Not clear if he'll actually be on the field or if he's just going to be there watching, but he's back with the team. And so now what's left for Reuben Foster? Well, there's still some stuff hanging over his head here. He could definitely be in hot water with the league still. Still potential trouble with the gun charge, the misdemeanor there. And there's going to be that June 6th hearing about the gun charge and then a weed charge from Alabama in January. At this point, I mean, and this is just pulling a number out of a hat because it's really hard to tell with the league, but I would set the over-under maybe at 2 games suspension for Reuben in the 2018 season. But you never know with Commissioner Goodell in the NFL. This could go a number of ways still with that. And these other charges still have to be figured out, and we'll see if there's any sort of pleas or any further action with these other two charges being the marijuana and the gun charge. So all in all, a great day for Reuben Foster. He was excited. He gave a thumbs up as he left the courthouse, and he will be back in Santa Clara with the 49ers on Thursday to resume his football career that looked like it was in peril for a while. So a big day, a big victory for Reuben Foster, and hopefully the DA is wrong and there was no wrongdoing with Foster and he did not strike that girl, because that's what's important in all this. And you really hope by the DA pushing this publicly that it doesn't hurt future victims of domestic violence from coming forward, because that's serious and it's important. And people who are victims have to be able to come forward, and people do need to be brought to justice that are guilty of this. But the overwhelming evidence in this case is that Reuben Foster was not guilty. Thus, he will be back to practice with the 49ers and still walking a thin line going forward with the league and I think the 49ers. But right now was a big day, a big win for Reuben Foster, and he will continue his career with the 49ers. And speaking of Roger Goodell and the NFL, another story breaking on Wednesday that is probably something a lot of people are tired of hearing of, but it's a pretty major development, so something we got to talk about here on Locked On 49ers. So here it is. Here is the NFL's new policy regarding the national anthem. Quote, "The 32 member clubs of the National Football League have reaffirmed their strong commitment to work alongside our players to strengthen our communities and advance social justice. The unique platform that we have created is unprecedented in its scope and will provide extraordinary resources in support of programs to promote positive social change in our communities. The membership also strongly believes that, number one, all team and league personnel on the field shall stand and show respect for the flag and the anthem. Two, the game operations manual will be revised to remove the requirement that all players be on the field for the anthem. Three, personnel who choose not to stand for the anthem may stay in the locker room or in a similar location off the field until after the anthem has been performed. Four, a club will be fined by the league if its personnel are on the field and do not stand and show respect for the flag and the anthem. Five, each club may develop its own work rules consistent with the above principles regarding its personnel who do not stand and show respect for the flag and the anthem. Six, the commissioner will impose appropriate discipline on league personnel who do not stand and show respect for the flag and the anthem." So, a lot of stuff there to say that you can't kneel while the anthem's going on the field, but you can be off the field and do whatever you want and stay in the locker room. But it's really weird because the statement starts out with, "The NFL has reaffirmed their strong commitment to work alongside our players to strengthen our communities and advance social injustice," except for they didn't talk to the players about this. This was all the owners getting together on their own. Let's just go to the quotes from a couple of owners who were talking about this. First from Cardinals CEO Michael Bidwell. He said, quote, "Looking forward to getting the focus back on football." And then Browns owner Jimmy Haslam said, quote, "As Roger and Michael have said, I think it will allow us to focus back on football." So if that was your goal, you completely failed, because they just did entirely the opposite. Now what they did is get the focus even more back on the anthem and on protests. So if that was the goal of this whole thing, they failed miserably. They talked about coming to compromise, but without discussing the decision with the folks who they're supposedly compromising with. So kind of pulled the rug out from under some of the players that they made a deal with before. From what I've seen on Twitter and things, there's some players that are very much not happy. Roger Goodell also said that all 32 teams unanimously were for this, but that is not true. 49ers owner Jed York, this is from Steve Weiss, said York abstained from the NFL owner's vote on the new anthem policy in part because he wanted to hear more from players. He added that he may halt concession sales at Levi's Stadium during the playing of the anthem. And Jim Trotter, this is from his chat with 49ers CEO Jed York, was the only person to not vote in the new anthem policy. He abstained. What kind of weight will that carry with his players? He asked Richard Sherman, who said, quote, it carries a lot of weight and we respect the hell out of him for it. So that kind of goes to show you where the players are at with this thing. And in fact, it sounds like they might actually have more players protesting now that wouldn't have been protesting before. This from Robert Klemko on Twitter. What I'm hearing from players, he says, those who weren't planning demonstrations for next season are now back in the conversation, discussing ways to skirt the new rules, quote, just to spite the NFL. So this is not going to go over well. Forcing people to be patriotic in a certain way, it's just not, it's not consistent with patriotism. That's not what patriotism is. This from Demoris Smith, who's the head of the Players Association. He released a statement saying, a little bit stronger worded, saying, quote, history has taught us that both patriotism and protests are like water. If the force is strong enough, it cannot be suppressed. Today, the CEOs of the NFL created a rule that people who hate autocracies should reject. I know that not all of the CEOs in the NFL are for this, and I know that true American patriots are not cheering today. Yeah, how do you reach a compromise without discussing the decision with the folks you are compromising with? That's the big one here that makes no sense, and I know is going to really piss off a lot of players. This is just another move that shows how incredibly tone-deaf the NFL is. Forced patriotism is not patriotism. You know, to me, sitting in the locker room for the anthem is much more anti-flag than taking a knee. The whole reason, which is lost on a lot of people, that kneeling was the gesture that was decided upon by these players, is that it shows respect for the flag and the anthem and the country, while also demonstrating and creating awareness that some things are not great for certain segments of the population. And the fact that it's kneeling was supposed to be that respect, rather than completely not being around for the anthem at all, which is now what the NFL wants these players to do. They'd rather them not be seen at all, which I think is way more anti-flag. So that just creates a whole level of, I don't know what people want. People would rather see people kneeling in a locker room and not have to see it than if they actually kneeled and they were on the field and they were paying their respect to the flag and the country in their own way. It has to be in the way the NFL wants it done. That's, oh man, that's incredibly tone deaf with what's going on in the world right now. It's not shocking, but it's surprising that they didn't run this by somebody first, because this is not going to end well for the league, and it's actually going to make things uglier, which was not what the league intended, obviously, by doing this. They were hoping to sweep it under the rug and make it so you couldn't see anybody. But, you know, protesting in the dark, protesting in silence somewhere where nobody can see it is no protest at all. That's not how it works. And the weird thing is, a real win for the league, and I'll end on this, a real win for the league and all of us would be to improve things to the point where players don't feel the need to take a knee. That's the win. That's getting everybody standing for the anthem, for the flag, because we all came together and we created a better country, a better America. And the flag still stands for everything that's going on in this country. So mandating a show of patriotism is not patriotism. That's the way the league could have won this, is to continue to do what they were trying to do for a while, is help these social issues. And part of that is money. But part of that is optics as well, and this was a huge step back, and I think a terrible move for the NFL. It just doesn't make a lot of sense, because it doesn't even accomplish what they think the goal is to accomplish here. So we'll see how this ends, but basically now what we have is not getting back to football week one. Now we have more people, more headlines that were created by this rule that went into effect today that will be focused on the anthem and focused on protests. That's going to be where all the cameras are. That's going to be where all of the reporters are looking while the anthem is happening. There's going to be more headlines now than there would have been about protests and about the anthem. So what they did was letting something kind of go away in a whimper and naturally take care of itself, and for the league to come out looking much better and for players to come out feeling much better about everything, now it's just gotten that much worse again. So by trying to get, quote, back to football, what the owners just did is make this, again, not about football and make people pay attention to everything else but football before the kickoff in week one. All right, well, let's get back to football here on the podcast at least. So let's hear from Kyle Shanahan in the episode talking about OTAs and talking about some of the players that were on the field this week that Reuben Foster is going to be joining up with. And first up, let's hear from the coach about the pass rush. It's something that a lot of fans, me included, were thinking the 49ers might address, that speed edge rush position, the Leo spot, maybe the strong side linebacker spot, sub-down rushers. How's the pass rush going to improve in 2018?
Everybody improves with better play around them. So and if an inside guy, you can improve with outside edge rush. You can also improve with good corner play. You can improve with good hook players because it's the quarterback, no one's open, which gives you a more of a second, more speed off the edge, can give you more space against the guards. But the better people get, the better our team gets overall, the better individuals get.
And what about the quarterback? How good could Jimmy Garoppolo be actually having a full offseason to work with Kyle Shanahan and get into that playbook?
Yes. I mean, you start over with formations to understand why, so he's just not memorizing it all every single week. You just know things, so you don't have to sit there and think about it. And when you do that, you can just focus on really the tough jobs, which is throwing, going through progressions, playing in that pocket. And everyone knows the crash course that Jimmy got last year, and it's been nice to just slow it down, teach him some of the verbiage and, you know, the whys instead of just, hey, memorize this by Sunday. It's been nice for him to know why and be able to relax and talk through that stuff. And then you hope the more you do that, it'll just carry over to play better.
One of the things we talked about on yesterday's show was that Joshua Garnett was running with the ones at right guard. So one of the big things I'm going to be looking for this preseason and in camp is how that newly structured body of Joshua Garnett looks and how he looks out there. And might the 49ers finally get the return on a first-round guard playing at that level? That could really be a huge boost for this offensive line. And Kyle Shanahan addressed the new look, Joshua Garnett.
I see a guy who's really going for it. You know, it's I've been very proud of how he handled his year off. You know, some guys, when they go through that, you know, they can get down, especially the surprise it was for him when it happened. He really took advantage of his year off. I think he's changed his body. I think he's lost weight and added some muscle. I think he's, by doing that, you're faster, you're more athletic, and I don't believe he's lost his power either because it's been the right type of weight. And he's had a good 2 days. You know, it's real early, but he's put himself in a position to be the best he can.
Speaking of years off, what about Joe Williams, who lost his entire rookie season aside from a little bit of camp and preseason? He was a guy that Kyle Shanahan loved before the 2017 draft.
He was following up a question after Josh Garnett and how he took advantage of his year off. Well, you know, Joe wasn't hurt as long as Josh, but he definitely, Joe's always been in good shape. He's always, physically, it's very good. You know, the thing with Joe is going to be, how does he do when you get to preseason, those games start?
All very positive vibes from Kyle Shanahan. It would be funny if he was like, oh yeah, that guy's trash. He's probably not going to make the roster. But someone who most likely will be making the roster, that's Jimmy Ward. Versatile. Is he a starter? Is he a backup? What's the plan with Jimmy Ward?
I think that's a compliment I like to give Jimmy. That's the type of player he is and how talented he is, that he's capable. I think if Jimmy doesn't earn a starting role, there's also a good chance he's the first backup at every single position, strong safety, free safety, nickel, corner, because he's capable of being a starter at all those positions also. And I'm hoping, which I think we've added very good competition, so it's not going to be easy for him to start in any of those five. Right now he's trying to do it at corner. We'll reassess this at the end of OTAs and see how it is in training camp. And if he's not starting, that's because those five guys in front of him are playing their positions very well, and Jimmy will be the first guy most likely off the bench.
All right, let's end this episode the way we started, talking about linebackers. Reuben Foster is going to be back on Thursday. Who's going to be playing next to him? In what spot is he going to be playing? Middle linebacker, weak side linebacker, and what's the difference?
Our Mike communicates to everyone. He sets the calls. He calls it in the huddle. He changes it at the line of scrimmage when tight ends motion. He changes the strengths and everything. And if you're not used to speaking that stuff every day, it's hard to just throw a guy into that situation. So we got a bunch of good players at inside linebacker. There's only two spots. You guys understand the situation with Ruben now. We got a lot of depth, too, with what we've had and what we've drafted. So we got to make sure all those guys are interchangeable. So we got to give them reps at both, and we'll see how this pans out by week one.
So when it comes to those two linebacker spots, I kind of always assumed that Reuben Foster was the guy they wanted to be the long-term middle linebacker, and then the draft Fred Warner seems like the perfect fit at the weak side linebacker spot with his coverage ability and athleticism, but he's a smart guy, and he's been working out with the middle linebacker group doing the communication stuff. So if he takes to that, maybe we see Fred Warner in the middle, and you leave Reuben Foster at the weak side spot where he was last year. And it seemed like he was a little bit slower to take to the communication stuff and spitting out those plays. So maybe that's the way things will look long-term for the 49ers if those two young players are the future at those two linebacker spots. Coach talked a little bit about how Fred Warner looked at practice this week.
He's been very impressive out there. He's a very smart guy, which you don't always know if that's going to be the case till you get someone, because it doesn't always translate to the field. And he's very smart, and he plays like it on the field. I mean, he's doesn't hesitate. He's a rookie out there, but he's calling the plays maybe even too loud, because I can hear him from the offensive side. But he doesn't mind speaking up. He's confident in what he's doing. It's going to get a little bit harder for him as it goes, and we'll have to bring him back a little bit for training camp. But he's had an impressive 2 days.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Locked On 49ers. Oh, real quick, by the way, State of the Franchise event in San Jose Wednesday night. Alternate uniforms unveiled. What do you guys think? Hit me up on Twitter at BDPeacock. You can email the show LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. And we'll be back next week right here on Locked On 49ers.